Here comes World Report for July 14th, 2008. World Report is an exploration of the anguish and the beauty of international events from a Canadian perspective. Here in Nelson, the War Resisters support campaign has changed tactics. The Daily News is still calling it a demonstration, but on Saturday, it turned into an all-night vigil to free Robin Long. Unlike a similar-sounding movement to free Mark Stein, Long has been in custody since July 4th. Stein always was free, although you'd never know it to hear his supporters squawk. The Vancouver campaign advises that Monday at 9:30 a.m., a federal judge will hear the application for a stay of Robin's deportation. Federal MP Alex Adamanenko called for Robin Long's release on Wednesday, July 9th. Adamanenko stated, quote, "With today's federal court ruling that another war resister, Corey Glass, has been given an extended deferral to stay in Canada, there is no way that Mr. Long should be deported, especially if neither Mr. Long nor his lawyer were properly notified as to the pre-removal risk assessment. This would be a violation of his legal right to appeal," end quote. Adamanenko went on to say, quote, "With a negative ruling on Mr. Long's pre-removal risk assessment, there is an even greater need for the government to act on the will of Parliament and the Canadian people to let Mr. Long and other U.S. war resisters stay in Canada." Long's lawyer, Shepard Moss, is seeking an emergency sitting of the federal court to ask for an immediate stay of his client's deportation. Hannah Hannigan of the Kootenai Region United Nations Association reports that Bud Gotteris came by the vigil outside the Nelson Police Station and mentioned that some 10,000 people from Spokane, Washington, have sent their letters, emails, and telegrams to the Canadian government in support of the recent parliamentary vote. NDP candidate for Kamloops Thompson Caribou, Michael Crawford, said, quote, "I am happy to be able to add my voice of support for Mr. Long to those of my NDP colleagues, Alex Adamanenko, MP for BC Southern Interior, and Olivia Chow, NDP Federal Immigration Critic, who have been working tirelessly for Mr. Long's release," end quote. The Nelson War Resisters Support Campaign writes that we agreed to ramp up pressure on Prime Minister Stephen Harper and Citizenship and Immigration Minister Dianne Finley to immediately stop the deportations of Robin and Corey and let all war resisters stay in Canada, end quote. Get out a pencil and paper, and I'll give you the contact information later on in the show. Still another movement aims to free Israeli nuclear whistleblower Mordechai Vanunu. The Israeli Committee for Middle East Free from Atomic, Biological, and Chemical Weapons ran the following ad in the Monday Haaretz, July 7th, to the government of Israel, "Stop harassment of Mordechai Vanunu, let him go free." And then a quote from the Universal Declaration on Human Rights, "Everyone has the right to leave any country, including his own, and to return to his country." Vanunu served an 18-year prison sentence, including more than 11 years in solitary confinement, for revealing Israel's secret nuclear program. He was released on the conditions that he is barred from leaving Israel and must seek official permission for all contacts with foreigners. Last year, the Jerusalem Magistrates Court sentenced him to half a year in jail for speaking to foreigners. This week, a Jerusalem court heard his appeal. On the Free Tibet front, listeners may be surprised to learn that the seventh round of talks between representatives of the Chinese government and envoys of the Dalai Lama have taken place. A sixth round of talks was held in early May after anti-China unrest shook the Tibetan region in March. The seventh round was postponed when an earthquake hit Sichuan province. Eyewitnesses inside Tibet report that several monasteries near Lhasa have been sealed off by the Chinese army. No one may go in or out of Drepung or Nechung monasteries, and photographs are forbidden. It is practically impossible to get any information from sources other than Tibet activists and the Western mainstream media. At the G8 meeting in Japan last week, George Bush and Nicolas Sarkozy announced that they would be attending the opening of the Olympic Games in Beijing next month. On February 15, 2008, Robert Lovelace, retired chief of the Ardoc Algonquin First Nation, was sentenced to 6 months in a maximum security prison. His crime? He had declared that he could not obey a court order which banned peaceful protest against uranium exploration on his community's territory in eastern Ontario. Lovelace argued that he must obey Algonquin law, which forbids uranium mining and exploration. The government of Ontario had approved the exploration in 2006 without any consultation with the Ardoc Algonquins and without any regard for the sensitive ecology of the area. Shortly after that conviction, I spoke to Donna Dillman. You may remember her as the Ontario grandmother who fasted against uranium mining last fall. She quit eating on October the 8th, the Monday of Thanksgiving weekend, and started eating again on the last day that the Ontario legislature sat, which was December the 13th.
Well, what I would really like to get at today is some sense of what your community is like and what it is that you've been through so far. People here have, years ago now, but in the late 70s and early 80s, went through a process of dealing with a uranium mining boom and a boom in exploration. And so we know a little bit about that, but we don't know what it's like for you. And I've done a little bit of looking at the map, and you are, in a way, in the heartland of Canadian uranium mining. There have been lots of uranium mines in that general area.
It's true, and even though it is true, it came as a surprise to most of the people here that we had uranium in our backyards. From my perspective, it was something that Northern Ontario and Northern Canada had. We hear about the Ministry of Northern Mines and Development, or Northern Development and Mines, and somehow we think it's all up there. Uh-huh. Well, it was quite a surprise to find it in our backyard. Our landscape is rocky, but not mountainous like yours. It's quite beautiful. There are lakes and rivers throughout. The roads are curvy and hilly. For the most part, pretty pristine.
Mm-hmm. Is there a lot of forestry there?
Yes, quite a lot of forestry still, and a lot of crown land, which is part of why this has gotten to where it is. And then there are people who have privately owned land, but that don't have their subsurface rights. And that's been a huge issue, the whole free entry mining.
Right, that was a big issue for us, too.
Yeah.
It costs something like $25 for a miner to get a license, and then they can stake and do it on private property.
Exactly, and do huge damage with 24 hours notice.
Uh-huh.
The huge tonnage of rocks that they can take out, trees that they can slash, and it's an antiquated act, and it needs to change, but it can't change soon enough
right.
What's going on here.
I'm looking at a map because I really wanted to get a better picture, and there's obviously no shortage of water. You've got all kinds of little lakes just scattered all over the place there. Mm-hmm. It looks like you're where I think you are. I'm not really sure where you actually are. I'm central Frontenac, which is where Chabot Lake is, I guess. Is about halfway between Peterborough and Ontario, north of Kingston.
In Ottawa.
Yeah, that's right. That's what I meant to say.
Yeah, and I'm about a third of the distance from that mine, which is just north of Charlotte Lake, and Ottawa. So it's about a half an hour to my place and an hour and a half to Ottawa.
I see. What's the name of your community?
Lanark, just north of Perth.
Lanark. Oh, I see that. Lanark Highlands, I see.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. So where do you get your water from?
Well, it's wells, and from the back of my property, you can throw a stone to the Mississippi River, which is the big one that will be affected by this. And it runs into the Ottawa just above the million people that live in Ottawa. So a lot of people should be concerned, and more and more are becoming aware.
Uh-huh.
And Ottawa's actually kind of got more than that happening because mining is happening in West Gatineau, And that flows into the Ottawa River, and of course there's the Chuck River and Ralston nuclear sites upriver on the Ottawa.
Uh-huh. Is that Mississippi River? Is that the Mississippi River?
Not the Mississippi.
No, okay.
No, this one runs the other way and is wholly Canadian.
Uh-huh. Okay. Yeah. I thought the Mississippi River in the States rises in Montana or something like that.
Yeah.
Okay. So
it's a bigger river down there, and I guess I always should clarify that, and I don't think to.
Uh-huh. Do people in your area mostly get their water from wells, or do they get it mostly from the rivers?
Both. Ottawa or Perth would be rivers. So the built-up towns were more likely to be rivers. And,
I see.
But there's an awful lot of people that live rurally like I do.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And so it sounds like would the main occupation in that region be forestry or agriculture, or is it mostly a series of bedroom communities for Ottawa and Kingston, Peterborough?
There's all of that. I guess if I had to say what I thought was most is that people are very much individuals and into kind of their own small businesses and cottage industry and that sort of thing. But there's all of those things happening. And not a big agricultural area just because it's pretty craggy with all the rocks. So it's not a lot of good agricultural land just in this strip.
Right.
But some of that.
Okay. So and wildlife, I guess?
Lots and lots of wildlife.
Yeah.
Yes.
So give us an idea of the chronology that you've been through.
Okay. Well, I'll take it to kind of before. I'll take kind of the bigger issue, and that is that a private landowner, Frank Morrison, was walking on his property one day a couple of years ago now and found the stakes and was surprised at that, but more surprised and shocked to find that it was uranium. Went to all of the various ministries to get help, got none. So he solicited the help of the Algonquins. There's two nations involved. And they had a band council meeting and decided that they would blockade the only access to the property. And the property's 30,000 acres. But because of the type of land and lakes and rivers and so on, you just can't get in there except this one place, so it was actually quite convenient.
Okay, hang on just a second. Have you had trouble getting information about the claims?
Not so much information, just help to stop them, because it's not something he'd retired there.
So this was on his land, is that right?
On his land,
okay.
Yeah. And nobody'd informed him.
Nobody had come and said we're exploring on your land or we're going to develop a mine on your land. Nobody said anything. He had
nobody
to discover
said that,
it himself.
And they don't actually have to give them any notice until they're coming in to extract, and then they have to give them 24 hours notice.
By extraction, does that mean when they start drilling, or does that mean when they start mining?
Drilling, drilling, of course. Maybe not, of course, because I didn't know this, but releases radon gas, which is the second leading cause of lung cancer. So that's already pretty serious.
Yeah.
The drilling and the extraction of rock to take away for samples and stuff.
Right, and that hasn't started yet, is that right?
That's what we were able to stop. So it looks like we've been successful to this point, but...
You stopped it last fall, then?
Last summer.
Last summer, okay.
Yeah, June 28th it all started, as far as the blockade. So that lasted 101 days, and the natives came out of the blockade because they had been successful in getting negotiations with the government. Now, normally that takes decades, so we consider that a success. Unfortunately, the government stopped acting in good faith when the natives were finally told that this is not open-ended, that this may not end in drilling. In fact, it's going to end in drilling. What we're actually talking about here is how many drill holes, not whether or not we're drilling. So the natives pulled out of the negotiation process at that point. And in the meantime, I had started developed more recently. I had to keep the premier's kind of feet to the fire and to keep raising public awareness. I had stopped eating and lived for 7 weeks on the side of the road. Starting October 8th, and the biggest issue wasn't actually not eating for me, it was the cold. When you're not metabolizing food, it's tough to stay warm inside a house. So that was the big thing. People didn't let me do anything, so I wasn't moving around a lot. That was to conserve calories. Mm-hmm. One thing you find out on the side of the road is you get your needs differentiated out from your wants. real quick.
Right. Well, I'm still looking at the map, and so when you talk about the side of the road, are you talking about Highway 7? I don't see it.
I'm talking about 509.
509.
Up from number 7, just west of Sherbet Lake.
Just west of it. Okay, maybe it's not on this map, or maybe it's not numbered on this map.
It might not be numbered. There'll be one going north there, though.
There's one called, it goes through Addington Highlands and Greater Napanee.
You're a little too far west.
Okay, there isn't a road on this map.
Okay.
All right, so that was the highway you were on was 509.
And just it's paved, but it's just a rural road, one lane each way.
Mm-hmm. And when you talk about the government, you're talking about the provincial government, is that right?
Correct.
Okay,
that's
so
correct.
Have you been in contact with the federal government at all?
I haven't personally. Some of the people, various people write to various members, but they're not looking at helping us out either. But it's not their issue. Well, there's actually one way it is their issue, but the uranium issue is not theirs until the uranium is actually extracted. Then it becomes a federal issue. The other way is that the land claims. It was the Supreme Court of Canada, I believe. Actually, I'm not certain of that. At some point, I think you'll talk to the native population and get this confirmed. But part of the duty to consult falls to the federal government, I think.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that group of Aboriginal people comes under Treaty 9, as I understand it. They are a treaty group.
Yes.
So
there's several aspects here, but no, the federal government is not involved currently, as far as I know.
Yeah, that's certainly was one of the tricky things for us, is that it is a jurisdiction that or an activity that impinges on several jurisdictions and may even entail municipal jurisdictions, or in British Columbia we have regional districts that have some small bit of authority in rural areas.
So do they then just end up passing the buck?
Isn't that what governments mostly do?
It is. Well, interestingly, every municipal council from Kingston right through to Ottawa, which represents about 1.25 million people, have supported our call for a moratorium, and most of them are the call for public inquiry into the Mining Act. Every council, all the way through the strip, which is, I believe, 13. But they're being ignored, too.
Well, it gets more and more difficult as you get more and more people involved in making that call. So you are calling for a provincial inquiry.
Well, we were calling for a moratorium on uranium mining. Barring that, a provincial inquiry, because that's how Nova Scotia and BC moved forward and got theirs.
Right.
And then doing something with the Antiquated Mining Act as well. So just to go back a little, because it's a citizens' inquiry that came out of my refusal to eat. What happened was we'd gotten what we thought was all the media we were going to get, hit a plateau on the side of the road, so we decided to move me to Queen's Park in Toronto. And so for the last 2.5 weeks of the action, we were there, and the second day that I was there, the Premier met with me, much to everyone's surprise, including mine. He actually set it up that I was meeting with Gravel, the Northern Development and Mines Minister, and then he walked in on the meeting. So I was sputtered over my tongue for a minute and then sat and talked with him. But in the last couple of minutes of our meeting, he told me that he needed to keep the lights on in Ontario, and that's why we needed low-grade uranium upriver of Ottawa. And I countered with, well, that doesn't make sense to me, because we already export over 80% of what we take out of the ground in Canada. So we don't need it to keep the lights on. And he and his minister were both surprised. And that's the judgment on my part. But it was clear, real clear to the people in the room that they were surprised. They didn't know this.
You've been through a process where the company applied for an injunction.
Yes.
And the protest went on despite the injunction. So you've had some people arrested.
That's right.
And charged with contempt of court?
Correct. And that's all very current. As of the middle of February, Bob Lovelace is sitting in jail at a maximum security unit in central Ontario. He got 6 months and a $25,000 fine. Co-chief of the Ardoc Nation, Algonquin Nation, received the same sentence, only with a $15,000 fine, because they had fewer days that they could prove she was inside the gate. Once they laid that sentence down, she was told that she'd lose her kids to CAS if she didn't go back in and what's called purge the contempt. purging the contempt was basically saying, I'm sorry, I did wrong, I won't do it again. And so she, in tears, had to say that, and several others, mm-hmm. three others actually, did that before her for various reasons. And upcoming, starting Tuesday actually, three settlers, which is what we non-native people are called, are also on trial for those same charges of contempt, and both of the First Nations will be back in court on a second charge of contempt to do with a second injunction that came down after the first one.
And that's when?
That all starts on Tuesday.
Tuesday.
Yeah.
On March 17th, Chief Donnie Morris and five other leaders of the Kitchenumakasub Ininuwug, or KI, received six-month sentences in a similar case. In KI's case, Ontario had also approved the staking and exploration of land, which KI says is part of its traditional territory, and which should not be subjected to the environmental impacts of mining. The six KI leaders, Chief Morris, Deputy Chief Jack McKay, spokesperson Sam McKay, counselors Cecilia Begg and Daryl Senewap, and Bruce Sakakeep, became known as the KI-6. Like the Ardoc Algonquins, they had refused to obey a court order prohibiting them from interfering with mining in their territory. In this Monday's ruling, the Ontario Court of Appeal said that the outdated Mining Act, quote, lies at the heart of this case, end quote. The court called the act, quote, a remarkably sweeping law which allows prospectors to stake claims on any Crown land and which allows no role for communities in deciding whether mineral exploration occurs in their territories even when they have unsettled land claims in those areas. The court noted that both KI and ARDOC had consistently asked the government of Ontario to engage in direct negotiations with them to resolve these disputes rather than supporting the mining company's efforts to obtain injunctions and then have community leaders jailed for refusing to obey the injunctions. The court said, quote, where a requested injunction is intended to create a protest-free zone for contentious private activity that affects asserted Aboriginal or treaty rights, the court must be very careful to ensure that, in the context of the dispute before it, the Crown has fully and faithfully discharged its duty to consult with the affected First Nations. The court must further be satisfied that every effort has been exhausted to obtain a negotiated or legislated solution to the dispute before it. Good faith on both sides is required in this process. End quote. Said Bob Lovelace, quote, we feel fully vindicated in the position we have taken and remain committed to our position that there will be no mineral exploration within the territories of KI or ARDOC without our consent. Our laws, which require respect for the land, are entitled to at least as much respect as Ontario's Mining Act. We remain open to dialogue, but Ontario has never responded to our proposals for negotiations. We want negotiations, not conflict, but we will enforce our laws and protect our land, end quote. KI spokesman Sam McKay added, the decision of the Court of Appeal proves that we went to jail because of the stubborn refusal of the provincial government to respect our laws and our perspective on development within our territories. The Premier of Ontario owes an apology to the people of KI and ARDOC, especially to those of us who were jailed for opposing an outdated and immoral law. A sincere apology would begin a process of healing and reconciliation. End quote. Last week, I announced that nonviolent conflict intervention training developed by the Nonviolent Peace Force would be available at the Brilliant Cultural Center on August 23rd. That's a Saturday from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. You can still get more information or pre-register for that by contacting Madeline McKay at Hotmail or by calling 250-767-3005. Donna McDonald will be interviewing Madeline on Nelson Before 9 on July 24th. That's not this week, but a week from Thursday. Pencil that in on your calendar. You can hear Nelson Before 9 between 7:30 and 8:30 in the morning, or again in the evening from 5 to 6. The Nelson War Resisters Support Campaign is asking that you write Prime Minister Harper and Immigration Minister Finlay to free Robin Long and respect the parliamentary motion to let war resisters stay in Canada. You can call and email Prime Minister Stephen Harper. You can call at 613 992-4211 or email to pm@pm.gc.ca. You can call and email Citizenship and Immigration Minister Diane Finley at 613-996-4974 or at the Ministry Office, which is 613-954-1064. You can email her. There are two addresses for that. One is Finley, F-I-N-L-E-Y, @parl.gc.ca or at FINLED1@parl.gc.ca. I really want to make that easy for us. Tell them to release Robin Long immediately and stop his deportation, to stop the removal order against Corey Glass and let him stay, and to respect the fact that nearly 2 out of 3 Canadians want resistors to stay. Honor the Joshua Key decision in federal court and implement the motion passed in Parliament on June 3rd that calls for a provision to allow U.S.-Iraq war resistors to stay in Canada. That's it for World Report today. This morning's show will be rebroadcast this evening at 6. The World Report website and blog is at worldreport.cjly.net. You can leave a comment about any of the stories on the website or email directly to earthling@cjly.net. Send surface mail to Box 767, Nelson, Canada, V1L5R4, attention World Report. The podcast situation continues to improve. You can also listen to a copy of this broadcast or subscribe to a podcast or listen to just one show at that same website where several options are on offer. Of course, our preference is that you get your podcast from the KCR site. It simplifies our bookkeeping and improves the statistics for the site. A more complete archive is available at the Radio for All site. AInfos has just finished a major upgrade to the Radio for All site with improved bandwidth and generally better reliability. Fane of the Cosmos, Peace Watch Middle East, and World Report have used this unique service for years for archiving, for syndication with other stations, for open access to private listeners, and for podcasting. If you have the client-side software on your machine, podcasts of this show are also available from iTunes. Remember the poll question, what do you see as the greatest threat to democracy today? There are just 39 days left to register your opinion. The only options that have received no votes are police, like the RCMP, and communism. Secret police, yes. Human rights councils, yes. Terrorism, Islamofascism, ecofascism, yes, yes, and yes. Capitalism, yes. The principle that you are guilty until proven innocent, administrative detention without charge, even institutionalized conflict of interest, are seen as threats to democracy, but not the police and not communism. If you're listening in the morning, stay tuned for KCR Stories with Terry Brennan, and Brigitte Hoos has been back from Alaska for several weeks now. If you're listening in the evening, the Bioneers will be coming up right after the station break. Thanks to the band Married to Music for the theme music played at the top of the show. That's from their vinyl album, Miracles. Thanks to Sidewinder's Coffee Company for their continued sponsorship of the World Report Question of the Week. And hello again out there to Mike Cannon of The Mike Cannon Show in Wausau, Wisconsin. I'm Jim Terrell at World Report for Kootenai Co-op Radio in Nelson, British Columbia. Thanks for listening.